Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week we're heading to London's Harold Pinter Theatre for a brand new production of Chekhov's 1898 play Uncle Vanya. Toby Jones stars as Vanya, a man who's devoted his life, oh the toil, to the country estate of his late sister's husband, a celebrated professor named Serebrikov. The professor feels stymied in the country and is about to sell the estate and move back to the city, much to the dismay of his daughter Sonia, Vanya and the rest of the family and staff. Things become even more tangled as Vanya and the family doctor Astrov both fall for Serebrikov's young and glamorous new wife Yelena, while Sonia is desperately in love with Astrov. It's a play about aging, unrequited love, potential and failure. This iteration of the classic sees director Ian Rickson and writer Conor McPherson reunited after the award-winning 1997 play The Weir. But will this be as much of a hit, and how does it sit in the canon of Vanya's? Well, joining me in the studio to discuss today are theatre critics for the International New York Times and The Stage, respectively, Matt Wolfe and Lynn Gardner. Welcome both to the programme.
Thank you.
Hello.
Lovely to have you here, fresh from press night at Uncle Vanya at the Harold Pinter Theatre. Matt, I want to start with you. I asked that question in the introduction. Where does this sit in the canon of Vanya's? How far away are we from sort of more traditional stagings, I wonder?
Well, this is a relatively traditional staging, certainly compared to, for instance, a Rob Ike staging a couple of years ago at the Almeida, which was far more radical in my view. This is a play that gets done all the time in London. It's kind of on a travelator of Vanya's. So I think if you've got kind of a big West End iteration of this play with stars in it, it's probably not going to push the envelope too much conceptually. Then the question arises, which is a different question, of how well does this version of it serve the play, which I guess we can get to.
Funnily enough, Robert Ike was sitting right behind me at the theatre last night.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And we had a little conversation about,
you
know, whether or not he was enjoying it. And he was saying, watching it, felt as though he was having two sonatas playing in his head simultaneously. His own production and the one he was watching.
And the one he's watching.
What expression was he making while he said this?
No, very smiley.
An aural challenge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you asked the question, Matt. It's exactly the right question. If not, where does this sit in the canon of Vanya's? What have they done to it to make it relevant, if such a thing needs to be done? It kind of explores universal themes.
Yeah.
I suppose the ordinary language or the contemporary language is one way
they've
done it.
Yeah, I mean, Conor McPherson has certainly given it a linguistic oomph, words I didn't know existed, like wang, which gets used a couple of times as a verb.
Yeah.
And I meant to look it up and I forgot.
Kind of nerdling on, wanging on.
Wanging on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those you sort of understand what it means in context, but it's not a verb I've ever used up until this point, but I might start from today. The contemporary application, well, first of all, this is a play that I absolutely love. It's one of my Desert Island plays because it, like all of Chekhov, it seems to be about not very much, but in fact is about everything. And whatever point you are at in your life, you resonate with one or another scenario, I think, in the play. The contemporary applications of it are certainly there to be had in individual notions of failure and potential not achieved. But also, Astrov, the character in this production, can't help but resonate with sort of a contemporary eco-warrior talking about Africa burning and forests being depleted. And you feel every time Richard Armitage steps to the front of the stage that he's sort of compressing a headline out of, you know, one of the papers.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sure, not lost on Conor McPherson or Ian Rickson. As far as it actually knocking me in the solar plexus, which is what I want Vanya's to do, this didn't do it for me the way Rob Ike's production did. I sat at the end dry-eyed, admiring, but dry-eyed. Mm. So some ultimate thing was not there for me.
Lynn, what about for you? How did the sort of contemporary language, wanging and otherwise, did that hit you in the solar plexus?
I think it does to a certain degree, and I think it does it in a good way.
Okay.
I think one of the things that you would say about this production is that it's pretty traditional. It goes for mood, it goes for atmosphere, it goes for fine acting. All the things that we absolutely kind of think of in a British theatre tradition of doing classics. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think we are at a moment in sort of British theatre production where there is a lot of interest in looking at the canon and looking at it and how we can scrape the barnacles off it. And that, of course, is what people like kind of Robert Icke do all the time. So in some ways, it almost comes as a surprise when you sit in your seat in the West End and watch something which is so very traditional in its approach.
And just a final note on that language, it was something Holly and I spoke about when we came out of the press night, was how ordinary does the language have to be until it makes the play ordinary? Because actually, personally, I felt that we'll use the word wanging again, as Matt's brought it up. But I wonder when, you know, despite the Chekhovian plot and situation, when, ordinary language makes for an ordinary play. Did that hit either of you?
No, I don't think that was a problem for me in any way whatsoever. And I think it's something, on the whole, that we're quite used to. I mean, after all, I think it would be very interesting. A little later in the year, we have Anya Rice's version of The Seagull, which has already been produced, but is being produced by Jamie Lloyd in the West End. And that is, a distinctly contemporary take on that particular Chekhov play.
Yeah, and I think the feeling that the sort of desire behind all this is, in a way, to erase, certainly in linguistic terms, a century of distance. Mm-hmm. So that even though these people may have been written in 1898, we feel as if we are hearing what they have to say to us in 2020. And one of the interesting things, maybe we'll talk about this more later, is the design of it, which I found quite beautiful, is of the time and also out of time. And I thought that was very interesting. And I think the translation wants to kind of bridge that distance as well.
Yeah, there seemed to be a kind of something strangely tropical. There was a bit of sort of almost tropical modernism about the set. Or certainly there was nature infringing on what potentially was a beautiful kind of dasha or whatever in the Russian countryside.
Yeah, there industrial was as well.
Yeah, and obviously they were using the back wall of the actual Harold Pinter Theatre, weren't they? And the kind of fire door with the brass
and
push plate on it.
Yeah,
all the pipes, but they were taken advantage of, weren't they?
I thought that was actually kind of wonderful.
Yeah, because I thought it was almost the best thing about it.
Yes, because you feel as if escape is such a sort of theme of this play. So the fact that there is a fire door that we could all use in our lives or not, but there's a literal one just in case the place goes up in flames. was I thought rather great.
I like that. I thought that's a rarefied metaphor. I like that.
I also thought there was another metaphor kind of sort of operating there, which with the way that nature was trying and struggling to take over. I mean, there were even patches of grass around some of the chairs, and it kind of made me think of that. You know, that in some ways that what you're seeing is not just something that plays to what Astroff is talking about, but it also represents the kind of semi-derelict state of most of the characters' hearts.
Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah. And even more, in so many ways, the height of it was extremely high, and Toby Jones is small a frame, and I thought that was actually on purpose, that the height of it made him particularly seem even more diminutive. And Richard Armitage, who's contrastingly hugely tall, at the very beginning of the production comes on and stands almost right at the lip of the stage, as if he is at one with the verticality of the set. And then when Vanya comes in, he's further back, and it seems to be about diminishing him, in which of course tallies with his own sense of diminution. So I thought all of this was quite nice.
Yeah. How and in terms of the set, the clever set, as we've discussed, how much does that divert from what we might call traditional sets? I mean, it's not a wild set in any sense of the imagination. But are we normally in the kind of the 19th century Russian drawing room scene in Uncle Vanya?
I think it's a kind of halfway house in some ways,
exactly,
you know, because it absolutely represents the living room within the dasha. But nonetheless, it clearly is not just a straightforward kind of representation in any way. And in some ways, I think, you know, again, it plays very generally with this production that about the fact that it both seems to me that it is acknowledging the years and years of production history that a a play like this kind of comes with. It comes freighted with mm-hmm. everything that has gone before. And yet at the same time, it is giving a nod and keeps on wanting to say, we are very contemporary as well.
There's something, a bit of Brecht in the back, in sort of showing some of the workings almost.
Yes, exposing the innards.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So we've mentioned a couple of the cast members, Toby Jones as Uncle Vanya. Let's start with him, Matt. I mean, such a busy performance, subtle performance, a small man in a big set. Talk us through Toby Jones.
A small man in a big set with an enormous ache. I mean, Vanya is sort of defined by ache in so many ways, personally, romantically, professionally, existentially. He's often compared as a character to Hamlet. I love the fact that much is made of him being extremely old and past his sell-by date at 47. And you just think, oh, if only. But 47, I guess, was different then than it is now.
Yeah. He thinks he might make it to 60. Yeah. 13 years,
right.
He says. Yeah.
It's very interesting, by the way, in the text, and this production of it always reminds me, it's not new to this production, but time and age, people are constantly talking about not only their own age, but how different they are in age from other people. So it's something in which the clock is seen to be ticking quite directly. I thought it was interesting, and I don't know whether this was driven directly by Ingrid, the director, or not, but for the first half, I thought it was really amplifying a bitter comedy to the part, almost darkly black comedy out of something I kept thinking weirdly of Alan Ayckbourn. And I was waiting for some of that to fall away, to get to the real existential despair of the play, which I've seen brought home so beautifully by, well, Simon Russell Beale preeminently at the Donmar, but also Paul Rees at the Almeida, who I thought was tremendous. And I thought Toby Jones got most of the way there, and I think he could probably get there. I'm just not sure that the production entirely pushed him there, because I think the production had sort of other things in mind.
Yeah. How do you mean that? In terms of, I think, in terms of the production kind of hampering the full scope of his performance.
I sort of got the feeling by the time it was over that Ingrid was quite directly not wanting perhaps the platonic ideal of Vanya that I have in my head. So maybe that's my problem as much as the production's issue, which is nothing too languorous, nothing too sort of self-consciously baleful. Mm. And you know what? I like a little bit of that wallow in my Vanyas. I want to feel kind of the sting of life unfulfilled. And that kind of pinprick didn't happen. And I'm not sure that that may be Rickson's design that it not happen.
Mm-hmm. Was it too funny? Was he too funny?
I thought for the first act it was a little gaggy.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course there is the big gag at the end, which is the moment when Astroff is trying to get back the morphine that Vanya has stolen from him. And eventually, and very reluctantly, Vanya produces it for him. But he produces it from a very comic place. It makes that sort of sense, that feeling, as if he couldn't even take his own potential suicide seriously. So it adds to the idea of him, you know, of being a clown. And I think the sad clown is, of course, you know, one of the characteristics of often any Vanya. That on one hand, we laugh at him, and on the other hand, we also feel incredibly sorry for him. But I think the clownishness is very high here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't for a moment, say that detracts from Toby Jones's skill in delivering that. I think he's absolutely remarkable. And one of the things, actually, funny enough, that I noticed was that I've looked at a number of the still images of it, and I often think that's really telling, about what you see in those moments. And on Jones's face is absolute despair.
Yeah. He's also got a bitterness that is very near the surface
yeah.
that I've not felt quite so keenly before, particularly in his relationship with his mother,
Dervla yes.
Molloy, yeah. which was foregrounded in this production in a way that it often isn't in other productions, where he's not only trapped in this estate without any particular romantic prospects, but his mother, for God's sake, doesn't seem to be any ally to him whatsoever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, yeah. no partner, no real mom. And he seemed to be subsumed by bitterness, yeah. which turns into a kind of dark comedy.
There's yeah. quite a bit of there was a bit of Beckett in there. He seems very much like an angry man railing into the sort of darkness. And Death of a Salesman, the thwarted yeah. man who feels like there should be a part for him in this sort of adult male life, but there isn't.
You know what I also was reminded of a couple of times was John Cleese in 40 Towers.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Yes.
That kind of inner rage and the way that it also comes out of snark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's funny you mentioned Beckett because we're about to have a revival of Beckett's Endgame at the Old Vic with Alan Cumming and Daniel Radcliffe. And that's another play I love. And there's a line in it which says something like, nothing is funnier than unhappiness. And I kept wondering again whether that was something going on here. Yeah. Let's yeah. mine the comedy where we can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the morphine bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. That seems to be that one of those kind of proper pratfall kind of moments that sort of Beckett seemed to be full of. What about the rest of the cast? And also in Uncle Vanya's, historically, are the cast there to prop up Vanya, to be sounding boards, to be mirrors to Uncle Vanya? Is it that sort of play?
Well, to me, it should be an indelible ensemble. I mean, yeah. yes, this has Toby Jones and Richard Armitage above the title, but at least I didn't go last night. I went two nights ago.
Right.
And at the bow at the end, there were no individual bows. Was yeah. that true last
yeah,
night?
Yeah, that was true last
right.
night. Yeah.
And I think that is as it must yeah. be. I mean, it's got to be a company thing. The rest of the cast, I thought, were a little bit of a mixed bag. I'll tell you one bit where I thought the comedy was completely misplaced, and I found this quite upsetting, very much compared to the Rob Ike production, where it absolutely devastated me, is at the end of the first half, where Sonia and Yelena are left alone, and they have this fantastic conversation, and Yelena's
well, they open the wine, and they pal up, finally.
And there's the bit at the piano, but they have to be careful because they don't want to wake the professor. So Sonia goes away to find out whether it's okay to kind of do this, and whether it'll, you know, put the cat amongst the pigeons. And the last line of the first half is, he says no, which I've always thought was just this, like, absolute world slamming down on them, that the world of the play is saying no to these characters at every turn. And on Wednesday night, the way Emily Wood delivered it, it got a huge laugh.
Same on press.
I really didn't like that because I don't find that line funny at all. I wasn't wild about Amy Lewitt, I have to say, who was so gestural. Every single thing was accompanied by a gesture. But I thought Rosalind Eleazar, conversely, was terrific. And I'm glad we seem to have moved away from this image of Yelena, which seemed to persist for a very long time, as a kind of moving willow tree, kind of shedding her leaves as she walks, barely visible because she's so elegantly svelte. And this was a much more earthy, robust woman who... and. Rosalind Eleazar has a gorgeous voice. I mean, really quite seductive. So I thought she worked very well. Yeah. I like Kieran Hines, too.
Yeah.
He was a little less decrepit and doddery than most of the professors. You felt there was some agency there. And in a sense, I could see him thinking, in a funny way, I felt sort of sympathetic towards him. You see him thinking, oh, God, this house is just full of nightmarish people wanging on. I'm getting out of here. And usually you just think, oh, you're an old prat. You're like a Polonius. But here I just thought, actually, if I were you, I would leave as well.
Yeah, what about that, Lynn? Because in order for the play to work, the characters as they're written, as they have to perform in the drama, need to be as relatable or not, or as sympathetic as not. What happens when you have, as Matt said, you've got a professor who you kind of think, do you know what, mate? Get out of there while you still can with your beautiful young wife.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the play that you always, to some degree, okay. like, think about that. Yeah. If I'm perfectly honest, I sort of slightly disagree with you, Matt. You said very early on around the fact that, you know, this was a play where there is somebody that you can, everybody in the audience can relate to, whether it is Sonia in love with Astroff or whether it's, you know, Vanya kind of much older. But I always think that this is a play in which you have have to have experienced some disappointment in your life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in order to kind of really understand it. I think it's a play that actually it's quite hard as a 17-year-old to kind of appreciate in any way. And I think one of the things that this production does very well, I think you're absolutely right about the way that Yelena is presented, that it feels much richer, much more depth, that she too is really, really aware of her own kind of failings. And there is this kind of extraordinary moment almost at the end when she and the professor are leaving and she and Astroff have a scene together, and she's kind of trying to hold it together. She's trying to be kind of go, this does not matter to me. And then this absolutely just devastating moment where she leaps and wraps her legs around him, you know, that she can't bear. Actually, it reminds me, obviously, of what happens with Masha in Three Sisters, with Vashinin, with something which is a much more acknowledged love affair, you know. So I thought that was very good. And I really liked Richard Armitage, because I thought one of the things that he did so well was to make us understand the toll that his daily job had taken, that in fact those lives that he could not save, those disasters that he attended as a doctor day after day, actually had a real wounding quality on his mental health and his own spirit.
I think that's beautifully put, and what this production gets very well by contrasting diminutive little Toby Jones and sort of tall, vertically, you know, elastic Richard Armitage. The characters arrive at the same place of a sort of nihilistic despair, but from such opposite ends of the spectrum. I mean, Vanya seems to be inhabiting a living death. His life is a kind of daily, you know, exercise in self-annihilation. But Astroff has experienced death. He's seen death. Well, he hasn't experienced it, but he's witnessed it. He's been a firsthand participant in it, and both of people and of climate. I mean, everything he touches seems to fall away. And in fact, there was a very interesting bit in the language at the end where, as he's leaving, he says he has an obligation to go somewhere. And I was put in mind of Kent at the end of King Lear, who says, you know, I can't stay, my master, I have an obligation to my master, I must go, or words to that effect. And people often think in that play, Kent is going off to kill himself to be with the dead Lear. And for the first time in this, I actually thought, gosh, I wonder if Astroff has just had it.
Right.
I wonder if he's just said, that's it.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean, I think it's totally open-ended.
Yeah, yeah.
And I may be wildly over-reading it. He may have had an appointment tomorrow morning.
the busy county doctor.
There's something else that we haven't mentioned, and I'd just very quickly like to, which
get
is
it
the,
in there, Lynn.
The lighting. Lighting by Bruno Poet.
A
man who
named Bruno Poet.
Such a good name.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a perfect name.
And the lighting in this is absolutely exquisite.
Ravishing.
Yes.
Ravishing.
From the initial kind of shafts of light that are coming through the windows to the fact that it kind of almost gets darker and darker and darker. And though you could kind of turn around and say, why don't they just pop off down to IKEA and get a bit more lighting and they'd be less depressed, you know, you also absolutely, it feels as though nature itself is kind of combining to press down on them.
It does, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's and strangely, it had a very sort of contemporary sort of Instagram sort of, you know, pot plants and interior garden kind of vibe about
the
it.
The opening, just tableau with Ray Smith's set and the lighting was so beautifully painterly. I just thought, put it on display in Tate Modern when this is over and let us just come and look at it.
Yeah.
Okay, Uncle Vanya, as described by Lynn Gardner and Matt Wolfe. Matt, it's the part of the programme we say, what did this remind you of? You've chosen The Sunset Limited, possibly misnamed Sunset.
Well, yeah, I chose this because I saw it the night before, so I saw them back to back. And they're in a way neatly twinned because Sunset Limited is by Cormac McCarthy, the American novelist who wrote it as a play to be done in Chicago. Then it was done as a novel. Then it was done as a television film. So it's been everything short of the Ice Ballet. But it's about two people, sort of at odds, like Vanya and Astroff, but that's it. It's just a cast of two. And they peer directly into the abyss. The characters, one is African-American, the other is Caucasian, and the character is called Black and White. And White has been rescued from suicide by Black, who is an ex-con, and Black has taken White back to his Manhattan tenement to kind of rehabilitate him towards life. And you could imagine Chekhov having a field day with this scenario. But what Chekhov would do, because he's Chekhov, and which Cormac McCarthy doesn't begin to do, is to ground it... Chekhov would have grounded these people in recognizable characters' characteristics. They would have some sort of identity as actual selves, not just archetypes. But with Sunset Limited, unlike Uncle Vanya, I just felt like I was listening to a series of position papers about how bleak life is without them ever connecting to character. So it really set me up to appreciate Chekhov the next night.
I like that sort of palate cleanser.
Yeah.
You got to spit. Like at the dentist, you got to spit rather than have to...
It was theatrical spit.
Get rid of... and it's a two-hander. It's a pure two-hander.
It's a two-hander directed by Terry Johnson. Great talents involved. Gary Beadle, who plays Black, is really terrific, but they should do on something else.
Okay, Lynn, you've veered away from the theatre. I say veered. You've walked stoutly away from the theatre into an American field in the 1930s. American Gothic.
Yeah. This is a painting by Grant Wood, painted in 1930. It's an extraordinarily famous, iconic American painting. And it is a painting of a man, a farmer, holding a pitchfork. And in fact, people often think it's his wife, but in fact, it's his daughter. Mm. And they're standing outside of a wooden house with a Gothic kind of church type window. I think this painting, it's in the Art Institute in Chicago, but it was here in London a couple of years ago at the Royal Academy. And this is a painting that always makes me think of Vanya. I suppose probably because of Vanya and his niece, I think of, you know, of him and Sonia.
The sort of rural setting.
Yeah.
The sadness.
Yeah.
Possibly.
But also, though, in fact, actually, the sensibility of it couldn't be further than, you know, than that from Russia. These are plain-faced people, I always think they look a little bit like medieval saints in a painting, sort of staring out with great stoicism. But I think there is something that is absolutely similar about the fact of people who toil and carry on toiling even when the odds are against them. And I think there is something that is both absurd about them, which also reminds me of Vanya, and also deeply touching.
Yeah, and I suppose this painting being committed to canvas in 1930, these people have survived the Depression.
Indeed.
So I suppose they look out at you with a sort of hard-earned stoicism, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Vanya, especially with Matt's new reading of Astrov's final words, could be bleaker than we ever first imagined, I suppose.
Well, perhaps in some ways, though, what I would say is that I think that Sonia's speech at the end of Vanya is one of the greatest speeches in theatre ever. And I always think about that. I'd like that speech to be read at my funeral.
Mm. There's no better way to... to end the programme. The tying up of strings has been done. Thank you both.
A pleasure.
Very much indeed. That brings us to the end of this week's show. Uncle Vanya is on at the Harold Pinter Theatre until May. Thank you to my guests, Lynn Gardner and Matt Wolfe, and of course to my producer, Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time next week, but for the time being, from me, Robert Bound, thank you very much for tuning in.